expecting to survive. Just waiting to arrive. Sharpened all my hooks right, my boat positioned well.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve, Jay, what's happening
Bird,
today?
Jay Bird. It's hot. It is hot down south. Oh, you were watching the Packers and Titans. It looks steamy. Mm-hmm. Steamy over there. Has it finally cooled down a smidge for you?
Yeah, we had a cold front go through. It's like 60 degrees for high today. So
nice. That'll knock it down a little bit.
Frickin' it will. It'll get things going.
It's been the constant complaint. It's almost the end of September. It's like earth, wind, and fire with the 21st of September. What are we looking at? No, it's 22nd, excuse me. Nonetheless, you know, it's a little late in the game to be that hot that you guys were just dealing with. You know, Herbie called me a few days ago, and he was just like, it's nasty. You know, a lot of pea soup in places still. What are you hearing? What are you seeing for all the folks that are coming up there for that fall bite?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty good fishing. You know, it's just like one day, you know, people get multiple fish, the next day it won't be so great, you know, typical muskie results. But I mean, based on the majors and minors and you know, the shallow weed thing has still been strong.
There you go. Throw it and turn the handle. Throw it and turn the handle. That's good stuff, you know. So can't go wrong there. We might as well let the cat out of the proverbial bag.
Yes.
So we've been teasing you, and if you guys are trollers, you're going to be a happy camper. I begged, I pleaded, I begged and pleaded. I offered favors that I will regret later to Duff at Supernatural to make a something exceptional that you're only going to be able to get your hands on at the Muskie Shop. He cracked out a batch of the brand new, the way he's doing it, it's a different joint, all this stuff, 12-inch jointed headlocks, Jay. They're going to be out when you just got them. You saw you got them in your hands. I had the demo when you did the video. What's cooking, man?
Yeah, we're going to put them on sale Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Central. Wednesday, the 25th of
there
September,
ain't a lot
just a
of
few
them, boys.
Short days away. There's no, it's first come, first serve. So we got five different colors, which is cool.
Yeah.
Because how long has it been? 6 years since any were made?
I guess.
Roughly?
I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
And then
you know?
The first time they were made, and they're killers.
Yeah.
They're killers. It's one of these deals. I actually went and shot a video that Jay's did the underwater. I sort of shot the tutorial of the ones I'm playing with. Duff was kind enough to make me one quick to play with. And, of course, go out there and smack one with it. It does the same stuff your supernatural baits do, but it's got the joint in it, which I like it for a slower look, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I learned with it. It is the baddest, like, speed up, slow down, float up bait I've ever seen. So Supernaturals rock on their way up. This thing has a wicked action on the float up. So surge, stop, surge, stop, surge, stop, surge, stop. Every time that thing's floating, it's just nasty because the tail's moving on the float up. So this late season stuff, you hear on occasion Jim will be on the podcast, the Tube Screamer, and we'll talk about jerk trolling, we'll talk about cold water trolling and tactics like that. Anytime you're getting in these fall temps, that propelled forward, then float up, right? Whether it be, you know, a dive and rise bait, trolled, like rip trolling, or surging with these baits because it looks so good on the float up. And the back breaks. So when it floats up, it's like poof, like this. It looks very wounded. And that tail section is just wagging around. So you've got an extra bit of motion there. The other thing is this is in the corners, Jay. When I'm turning with that thing, right? When I'm taking these jointed headlocks and making corners, they seem to scoot out quite a bit more. Right? So it's got a little bit more mojo in the turn. It's going to help you connect with some fish. So if you're a serious troller or you're looking for a monster, get your hands on them. Like I said, it's you know, sounds corny. Limited. You know, Duff can only make so many. So, and I had to beg Jay. I think I got a Moe's yard or something. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll put the video out tomorrow on YouTube. So Muskie Shop YouTube channel, check it out. Cool. The thing looks great. And you had a lot of good points on it too. It's still got that, you know, supernatural high speed kind of trolling effect to
it. Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
said, you know, when you slow down too.
Yeah,
at slower speeds, you know, it's something and with jointed crankbaits, you know, they excel at slower speeds.
And that's the thing is, like, the illusion of speed, that's the whole trick. Like, whether it be a jointed, like the Pounder from Livingston, or a jointed depth rater, or whatever jointed crankbait you want to do, they have more motion, if you will, at lower speeds because of the joint. So they run... your typical casting crankbaits, I was just about to say about the trolling charts on this, they run typically just a smidge shallower than the standard. So with the 12-inch jointed, I'm adding about 2 to 3 feet to get the exact same running depth that you see. Like, if you get on the Muskie 360 app, there's the trolling chart for the 12-inch headlock, right? Add 3 feet. That's it, right? So about 3 feet extra will have that thing running exactly where the non-jointed will, but that motion, like I said, in the turns, especially when you're turning, like I was saying, like that dig in and all this stuff on the turn, like if you imagine when that's on the inside of a turn, not only is it floating up, but it's digging a little bit more left to right. So I like it. It's cool. It's going to be one of those things of get them while you can, you know, if you're serious about big fish and serious about trolling. I talked to Jim about it, talked to Duff. So we've got the gizzard, or not gizzard, but black rice, super popular thing. You've got a shad, you've got Superman, you've got some perch, you've got a freaking whitetail walleye. So it's got all your bases covered there. So,
it's
cool. Excited about that. We've been teasing it, but Duff delivered, and then he sent me a picture of himself and his apron in the shop looking foolish. So, I'm stoked about those guys. Those are going to be killers. Big water fishing. I mean, it doesn't matter where you're going to go. You're going to put them in the boat with that. Then the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop. Talked about last week. Threw it up. Magnus is up there on the promo where you can get signed up for it. That's going to be coming out after the first of the year. But Jay, I freaking took that thing out down here at home, and it is dynamite. Jay's been playing with one too, but nasty results on video, I'll tell you that much. But anyway, before we what was I going to say? What else showed up here? Well, the Boss Shed stuff. Which is cool.
Very cool.
The entire Boss Shed from a 4.5 to the 8-inch. I'm looking here. They make killer stuff. I believe everything's handmade. I'm 99.
Yes,
it is.
They are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so custom little trolley casty cranks, Boss Sheds. We have all the trolling charts on the app if you want to add them to your repertoire, Jay. You have all the running depths right there. But they're cool, man, especially I've done well in the past. The one that I've had the most experience with is the 7-inch shallow Boss Shad, right?
Okay.
Which is kind of a panfishy body. I've definitely had experience with it. But the 8-inch minnow looks like some casting options. I mean, they're cool stuff. You cannot go wrong there. It's kind of like, I'm glad that we got them, because if you've done well at any point with like tough shad, you know what I'm trying to talk about?
Sure.
So the tough shad, great bait. This is a cool alternative for that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the Jake and the Grandma, if you will, or if you're downsized trolling. Obviously you can cast them, but great trolling baits, and it's a nice mix up, kind of in that custom vein for that mid range deal, right? There's not a lot of baits. I mean, you can get your little some crankbaits that are like basically what I personally refer to as like bass baits, you know what I'm saying, like some of the mass produced ones, where these are definitely driven for musky fishing, and you don't have to worry about it. So those are cool. Got a handful of the Legend Plow stuff, Legend Outcast. You've got those handful of those still kicking. Anything else going on? I can't believe
those were going really fast.
I'll tell you what's crazy. It's funny. It's like we wait, you know, months and nothing's happening. It's like you sort of, we always get like the comings and the goings of the muskie shop, and it gets real hot and heavy, right? In the early spring, and then nothing happens. This year has been crazy for the amount of stuff we've gotten late in the year.
Yeah, and there's more coming too.
There's more coming. Yeah.
There's a couple other cool baits coming soon, I hope, before it's you know, well into October at least, you know.
Yeah, people are still fishing.
Still using this year, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. So, and then, oh God, something else. So we said the Livingston Kraken paddle tail and the curly tail will be there. They have shipped from Livingston to the muskie shop.
Yeah, they're on the way right now. So hopefully within a couple days we'll have them up.
You know, whoever had them on their truck was probably drunk in the parking lot at the truck stop, Jay.
Oh boy.
You know, got a little lot lizard action. Was like, I don't want to deliver them.
Could have blown a tranny in the, you know, truck stop there.
Guaranteed.
You know, that would be devastating. Yeah. Bad news.
Places that I can guarantee you could blow a tranny is a truck stop. You pull in there, grinds to a halt. Tranny's gone.
Seen it once. It's
transmission's
seen it
100 times. Gone. Right, exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Jay's filmed it thousands of times. Anyway. It is what it is. Guys, I have to. I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm leaving on a jet plane, Jay.
Very, I'm excited, too.
Yeah, why? Because I'll be gone, not bothering you.
No, it's going to be a great adventure. I mean, you're going with Eric from Livingston. Yeah, you're going to that huge show again in Hungary.
That would be it.
And you're bringing the Magnus and bringing the pain, as they say.
Yeah, headed over there. Went last year, got a. Which I still have. It's in my office. I'm kind of shocked. To be honest with you, I'm kind of shocked. Got an award for the Titan, which was cool. Again,
yeah.
You know, freaking. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, some award you won in fourth grade. My mom will keep it. You know, it's whatever. But it was cool. I was very honored, and it was neat. I got to meet so many interesting people. One of the coolest things ever, which is talk about the opportunity to hang out with the guy. Freaking heck! The guppy who makes it, Strike King,
Strike Pro.
Excuse me. Got to hang out with Steve from Strike Pro, the owner of that company from freaking Japan. You know, so that was cool. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of different stuff. So, and there's this company, these dudes that are from Estonia that have been killing it on Krakens, right? They are pike influencers from Estonia. I actually remember I sent you that video. The one where the guy that he's holding up about 4 or 5 weeks ago and he's holding up the bait. But those guys are going to be. So what I'm going to do next week is there'll be a slight delay. I think we'll have it. Typically, if we miss Sunday, we get on Monday. I'm going to try to interview as many of these people as I can, Jay, next week.
Okay.
So we have. It'd be cool. Like I said, I really want to pick like Steve from Strike Pro. You know, here's a Japanese bait maker. How many opportunities do you have to be in the same room with him or some of these pike guys? And hopefully, you know, the company Weston that makes musky pike stuff's going to be there and all these different things. So I'm going to do my damnedest to get some of these guys to sit down and maybe I'll just record it on my phone or something like that and try to pick their brain about what's going on and try to find out what's happening, because if there's anything cool that is going to be applicable for muskie fishing in the next year, literally what's coming out, well, I'm about to see it in a matter of days. So I will
report back
on that. I might even, who knows, I'll film some video and see if it's usable or anything like that, of some of the stuff that's going on, because I'm kind of excited about it. It's always neat because, you know, the pike guys borrow from muskie and we borrow from pike. And, you know, you look at Savage Gear, which is totally a European company, and now they're in the muskie game and vice versa. And you look at Livingston and we were, you know, primarily pushing muskies and it's going into pike pretty dang well over there. So I'll try to report back as much as I can and try to sit down with some of these people. I believe that some of the people from Shimano, like of Japan, will be there. So I'll try to figure out, you know, there's quite a bit of gap between a lot of these companies where it's just like, yeah, I can get the Smitties on the phone pretty easy, you know, but it's like, remember we tried to do the interview with Mads?
No, it was, yeah, it was brutal trying to get hold of him.
Yeah.
He was in Thailand or something at the time, you know, on the water.
Aren't they all in Thailand now? Really? Again, back to the truck stop. Yeah. He's in Thailand for a thing. Nonetheless, that was tough. And then, you know, we had people emailing again. I tried to correct. It's like, here we have bad signal, and then you have really harsh accents and things of that nature. So I'll try to squeeze out some usable stuff while I'm over there, just because it's such a different scene. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then see how much more the guys that fish those whales catfish have stole from us. I learned last year they figure eight for those things. The whales catfish, the giant catfish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's that. They do all that funky stuff. So I'll report back on that and see what kind of buffoonery I can get in. Again, you know, it's just like,
should be good.
Well, you know, between that and all the other stuff. And I believe we'll see. I think in the spring there's going to be another European filming trip. More on that later, but that's the combo now of going somewhere even weirder than the Netherlands, Jay. I'm talking like way out in the like, huh? He might be skinned and ransomed, you know. So we'll see. We have before I cut out of here and go across the pond, mate. Isn't that what they say? Oh no, wrong accent. Good day.
No, you're thinking about Australia.
My apologies. Good day. Anyway. Before I cut out of there, we got a ton of Q&A to catch up on. A lot of gear talk, so we're going to jump into it. John!
Okay.
I'm new to muskie fishing and now an avid listener to your podcast, reading Mr. Paul's book. Well, he called me Mr. Paul. That's funny. So no one calls me
Mr. It is a good one.
It's appreciated. No brevity needed, I promise you that. And he says I'm absorbing everything I can. Your information has helped me immensely. I want to take a fall trip. I'm trying to decide where to go. I live in Duluth, and there are two places I'm considering, Lake of the Woods and the Minocqua area. I hear you guys talking about how pressured the waters of Minocqua are. As a new muskie hunter, am I better served fishing the bigger water, Lake of the Woods? Please let me know what I should do. You know, is bigger, better, blah, 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 blah. If you're in Duluth, my knee-jerk reaction is go to Lake of the Woods. That would be me. But it's really not that far from Minocqua. It's a different... Okay, let's back this down to this, Jay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Action. Are we looking for action? He's new to the game. Are we looking for action? Or are we looking for big opportunity? Which, heading to the North Woods, might be a little more manageable. Our knee-jerk to Canada... But, you know, if he's newer in the game, you know, I mean, it's not the, you know, here in this fall trip, I mean, what's it shaping up to be in like October?
Right.
You know, what's a good day? I mean, I haven't spent, I'm going to be up there actually when I get back from Hungary. I'm going to be at Jay's house. That's a whole other conversation. We'll have another live from Jay's dungeon. You know, a good moderate sized lake. Perfect conditions this fall. I mean, you can get into what? 2, 3, 4? What's your thoughts?
Absolutely. It's to say that Minocqua lakes are pressured. I don't know if that's really accurate. I don't agree with that. I mean, there's a... How many times have you been up here and we've gone out? Or we've gone out with a tube screamer?
Yeah.
Even on weekends, and there's really not much musky pressure. I mean, on some lakes, it peaks summer and stuff like that. Of course, you're going to get water skis and stuff, but pressure compared to southern Wisconsin or mostly anywhere else in the planet.
Minneapolis,
No,
that's a thing.
No, there really isn't.
There's pressure, but there's also, there's plenty of places to freaking go.
I was talking to Elmer, just got back from Lake of the Woods. He got back about a week ago or something like that. And I asked him, what was the pressure like out there? Muskie. He's like, well, actually, there was quite a bit. Anytime you looked around, you could see several people muskie fishing.
Well, you'll have, I mean, Lake of the Woods is as popular as it gets.
Yeah.
You know, it's an American side accent. I don't know, John. I mean, it's your question's great. It's like Lake of the Woods would be, I would dip, unarguably, when you get into Muskies, you're going to have a bigger size class average there. But if you need to put some under your belt and see a lot of different stuff, the North Woods, because, I mean, you've got clear stuff, you got tannic stuff, you got rivers, you got blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
So there's right. a lot. I mean, it's like we're not working for the tourism board by any means, but pick your poison. You know, like in realistically, I mean, frickin', it's not that far from, I've driven from Jay lives in St. Germain. What you got to think about when you go to Monaco, you got St. Germain, you got Eagle River, right? If you're desperate, you go to Slime Lander or Plover. Excuse me. You go, that was horrible. You go, I mean, it's a long day, okay? I had a tough one, all right?
Hot.
Hot. I'm tired. I'm hot and bothered. But you've got so much
you've got the highest concentration of freshwater lakes in the world right here in Vilas and Oneida County, so that's something to be said, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of small and mid-sized lakes to choose from, like you said, a variety of different lake types, too.
Right. Now,
it's so cool.
Like, unarguably, if we're going to rock and roll for big fish, Lake of the Woods, period. Right? Now, I would not say that the U.S. side is better in the fall than the Canadian side. Right. So the bottom half of that lake is not anywhere that I would really, I mean, there's fish there. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like when you get up in the upper section, we can't tell you what to do, but that's a kind of like that. That's kind of the juxtaposition of the two. Right. So if you feel like, hey, you could tackle Lake of the Woods, there's great maps. You'll be fine. You'll be safe. Right. Let me back that up. Don't take that for granted, but there's plenty of mapping and routes, right? Number one. However, there's great mapping and routes on the Northwoods. If you want action and you wanted to get dialed in, because if I was like new to the game, right, Jay, I would go, all right, I'm fishing my home waters. I think the Northwoods would be great where I spend some time there. I get to see a lot of different things, and I might not catch a Gigantosaurus, but I can get some practice under my belt and some experience under my belt before I went to the big water.
Then you go out in October. He's talking about an October trip, right?
I don't know. Yeah, he said fall. So, I mean, it's late fall. September and we just sent it.
You don't want to get blown off the water, too. I mean, you got a massive, you know, couple hundred thousand acres and it's just like you got a bad wind day. It's like, I don't think we can get out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's.
You can always deal with it up here.
There is, let me put it this way. There's no comparison between Vilas and Oneida counties and Lake of the Woods. However, you know, what experience are you looking to have? You know, what's the goal? So you're going to learn a bunch on both. And the cool thing for me, you know, and again, hopefully everybody gets the opportunity at some point in their fishing experience is seeing a lot of different water, right? I think the biggest eye-opening thing for me is fishing from literally the very bottom of the habitat range all the way to the most northern. I fished tiger muskies literally around Washington, Seattle, mere minutes from the Pacific Ocean, right? And then on the East Coast. So those are all experiences that I have under my belt where I understand, you know, a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So maybe at some point you consider it's not one or the other. Maybe you make time for both because they're drastically different experiences, right? I would say the Northwoods is going to be more forgiving because you can hop on different lakes. Boat control will be easier, things of that nature. But Lake of the Woods is Lake of the Woods. You're on a Canadian Shield Lake, and that's where the magic happens. So, kind of pick your poison, Jim. The first week of September, I went shallow in Minnesota. Water temps were 7 degrees. Saw two muskies in low 40s. They were in 3 to 4 feet of water and over sand in front of reeds. Jay, that sounds about right, doesn't it? Oh, yep. Reeds, shallow water, Minnesota. You got it, baby.
Crazy.
A week later, temps are back up to 73. I tried shallow in the deep edge of the weeds. A couple of follows and no action. Lots of northern pike on the weed edge. Up in the weeds, no muskies. Now, what? Now what? Well, that's just the ebb and flow of the game, right? You got your hot days, you got your cold days, and I don't mean temperature-wise, but you've got a fluctuation in activity level based on climactic changes, things of that nature. What I would look at is he's saying he's seeing 70, and then he saw 73. Before I would close out a day where I'm having action, yeah, shot at a couple low 40s, whatever it is, low mid 40s. When you're going to wrap up and you've been on good bite, drive up to where the fish were. Right? And I always encourage people to do this. Once you, let's say you fished a weed edge, right? You feel like you have saturation casted, you have exhausted that scenario. You can now burn the spot by driving your boat over it or into it. Get a reed with your trolling motor versus maybe your transom. So you got a sonar on your transom and one on your trolling motor, and go, is it a superficial reed? Is it cooler here? Is it, you know, is there a difference between the surface and the trolling motor reed of 2 to 3 feet, right? And take note of that when muskies are moving. Because let's say theoretically, you know, you saw 70 degrees and they had really pushed up shallow. But in reality, in that super shallow water, it was just, you know, a differential of just a degree or two or whatever it might be, right? Whereas now where you're reading 73, is it what's the differential? Or is it like then that shallow segment of the water column, there's no differential between where you're at and where the muskies had staged, right? Find out, do a little homework. And that's the hard thing. When the bite is good, people don't pay attention, right? People check out and they're focused on catching muskies, which is obviously the goal. But we still need a lot, 5 freaking seconds to go, what is happening today? Let's stop trying to catch one and let's analyze in the very moment what is taking place that is influencing this positively, right? We can all tell each other, we could do a podcast for 4 days without stopping of things that are bad, right? Right? The bitching and moaning podcast, things that are bad. Let's start at jet skis. No, I'm teasing. But they got to be seen. But
you're right. You know, that how many times, you know, people have remarked they were on fire yesterday.
Why?
How come?
Yeah.
But what do you figure? What was the deal?
Yeah.
I don't know. Clouds rolled in, you know, or something maybe as much detail as that is offered. I don't know. But I think you're right. I don't think we, you know, tend to overanalyze.
We over
made a great, you know.
No, we overanalyze bad conditions.
Yeah, probably.
When you overanalyze good conditions, that's when you start learning more and more. So again, is there a dual temperature read there? Maybe, maybe not. You're seeing pike on that outside edge, but you're not having the musky action you're looking for. If they're not shallow, you check mid. If they're not mid, guess where they're at? They're deep, right? So we need to check all three phases of the game or possibly suspend it. It's Minnesota. So what I would do if my game plan's not clicking, and I assume they're going to be in that shallow sand reed bite, which is totally a Minnesota thing this time of year, if it's not clicking, you hit that mid thing, you got some follows or whatnot happen there, go deeper, right? It's a flick of the tail for them to go out of 6 inches down to 20 feet, right? So, and like I said, when things are good, and this is outside of Jim's question, but just generality, take the time to analyze when things are good. Take the time to analyze. 5 minutes, right? Have a cup of coffee, stare at a squirrel. What is happening right now is good. Like today, right, Jay? It was miserable hot, high bright sun, dead flat calm, and then thunder clouds came, and then there came 4 muskies. Well, that's obvious, right? Doesn't take a rocket genius to figure that one out. But when it's nuanced, it's often lost on us, right? So the more nuanced the bite is, they're on fire today. Like you said, Jake, they're moving. That's the difference. What do you think? Well,
What about the bluegill guy? There's always a bluegill guy in the area. Where's he fishing? Oh, he's up on the edge of the reeds, smoking fish left and right.
Son of a bitch. There's always
remember the bluegill guy when we were in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Always one. Use it for his depth. And, you know, and if they're catching fish, it's just like, you know, pay attention to what depth they're at. You know?
I'm putting that quote on your headstone. There's always a bluegill guy. Great quotes in there. It's true, though. It's true. And they're, you know what? They're usually the guy that's bluegill fishing, he's usually so sad. If you go ask him how he's doing, he'll talk to you.
They usually are. Yeah. Sometimes they'll talk to you.
My wife, Evelyn, left me. I'm out here slaying the gills. You know, sir, why is that bluing around your mouth? I thought I'd catch a few more before I blew my face off.
$5 for a dozen crawlers at the quick
market. Charging $5. Can you believe it?
Highway robbery.
I'm going to eat every damn one of them. Henry, greetings from Canada. As things start to cool down up here, I want to ask you guys about your favorite quick strike rigs and why you prefer them. Also, what size of suckers do you prefer? Is bigger better, or is a snack the way to go? Quick strike rigs.
There's a bunch of good ones.
Can you believe they're charging $5 for a dozen crawlers? I'm going to burn that place down. Then I'm going to shoot myself in the parking lot because Evelyn left me because I bluegill fish too much. Anyway, the Smitties make a pretty dang good quick strike. Booker makes a good quick strike. What I will say is this. I make my own. And that is it AFW Toothproof makes the multi-strand wire that's coated, Jay?
Sure do.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Sevalon.
There you go. So, but what do you say, Babylon 5, what?
Sevalon.
Okay. Anyway, what I like to do, because he asked about sucker size, right?
Sure.
I like to tailor my rigs for the fish as closely as possible. So It just takes a couple quick crimps and I've got a custom made rig for the approximate size of what I'm fishing. Right. Something that I do with my quick strikes, I use two trebles. That is it. One is through their snoot. Ah, I apologize, folks. Jay, just, can you hear me?
Check 1, 2.
My phone that you're plugged into just fell. I apologize.
Ooh, did it survive?
It's in a otter box. It's actually, my phone is actually held and protected by a live otter. Nonetheless, so I use a custom built quick strikes for the size of the suckers I'm fishing. I put one through their snoot, and we did a video on this last year. Watch it if you're willing to learn how to sucker fish. It's on the Muskie Shop channel. And then I put one hook through their lip, and then I put like a piece of plastic. So the Smitties come like a rubber disc. My redneck trick is like cutting a little, like a bottle cap down from a water bottle and jamming that over there. That will prevent the sucker from pulling out of his lip. So you make a little disc or a square. It doesn't matter. Pop that over the barb. He ain't coming off there. Scratch off some scales. Put on the other side. Whammo, bammo, we got him. Right? If you're not comfortable with crimping, which is super easy, but everybody's, you know, you got to get comfortable with your own thing. I like the Smitty rig because they have the little disc in there, and the Booker rig's not dissimilar. What's the other ones, Jay? I've not fished too many other ones.
Yeah. Another one is the Clip and Ghost from Shumway.
That's a different. Fuzzy. Yeah. Explain.
So that is running a nose rig. Smitty's offer that too. It's a very popular way to go. There's really two ways to go. You either use hooks to attach to the sucker in the mouth. Generally, a single hook is used, whether it's Booker or a traditional Smitty rig. You know, a light like Aberdeen small hook, and that's just the guide that's just holding that thing and driving it straight when there is move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the nose rigs are providing the same thing. It's a centralized location. Boom, through the nostrils. guy called the other day that you might know, our buddy Jace, you know, and he was looking at quick setting some pike because he can't get suckers in the Dakotas.
He listened to that Steve Herbeck thing.
So he's like, oh, I shouldn't use a nose rig, right? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Probably try using a nose rig on a pike. It'll probably kill it. I don't know. I've never tried that. But just get a traditional Smitty rig for the length of the fish. And that's what you were talking about earlier, you know, and just like match the, you know, going with an 18-inch sucker. A lot of people look for that. They ask for it on the phone. You got any 18s and 22s?
Oh, come on.
That's an extremely large fish.
Yeah.
And getting coverage on that on any sucker rig is going to be, you know, I think you could get a huge fish hitting that and you know, no iron in the mouth. So
yeah, you better whack them.
Not to mention plenty of big fish at smaller suckers. You know, 12 to 15 inch is a great all-purpose size, and any of the rigs, you know, the medium or large rigs will provide good coverage.
Right.
Treble on each side, kind of high on the back of the sucker, and whatever rig you go with, you know, you got to just feel what works for you. The nose rigs are pretty easy to use. You know, it's not... the nose rig started with the AKA Herbie rig. Remember those?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you had to have a baiting needle and use a rubber band. And it was a little bit of work.
Yeah.
They work, yeah, you know, but the rubber band would break. You know, that was the nose guiding principle on that one. The nose clips have taken over and it's a little more simplistic, same basic principle though. And they work well for a lot of people.
Here's my thing is like most of my, you know, lures, most of my presentations, 8 to 12 inch baits. I mean, if you stretch a pounder out, I'm sure it's like 22 inches or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like it's in motion. Right, whatever. 10 to 12 inch suckers are more than sufficient in my book. More than sufficient. I've got a 22 inch sucker. I'm going out here. And every time I got to reel him up to reset him, I get to fight him. I mean, that's where you're at. I mean,
provides a little excitement on a dull day or a cold day.
I've had them before, dude, where you're like, is that a fish? Oh, no, the sucker's just pulling drag.
Right. Click, click, click.
Right. And I set my drags on. In the video, I talk about how I set the drags and stuff. I'm like, oh, shoot, there's one. No, but it's a sucker. It can be overkill, right? It can be overkill. I like to be conservative, mid-range, on the sucker size because, yes, we all want to catch Donkey Kong, but I promise you Donkey Kong will eat a 12-incher as fast as he'll eat a 22 if it's actively feeding.
Well, what do you think a big muskie, you know, say something, you know, 45 inches and above, a really, you know, large muskie is going to look at a massive...
Nah.
Well, I'm talking average. The average person doesn't encounter 50-inch fish.
Well, I don't think a 45 is going to – I'm sure somebody's going to email me.
Not the point, Steve. Okay. Not the point. Okay. Let's say it's a big fish. Let's say it's over 30 inches.
Let's say it's illegal. It's 24.
Yeah, I'm a mature muskie. Do you think they're intimidated or are turned off by something that's too big? It's just like, I'm not going after that. I want a little bit easier meal.
So let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
A 30-inch muskie. We'll start. We'll work our way up, right?
Okay.
30-inch muskie. I don't even put my hands under their jaw because my hand doesn't fit in their freaking head, right?
Right.
We trout hold them. If somebody has to have, if it's somebody's first muskie or whatever, right? We hold it up, let it go, move on with our life. 40-incher, it's a sizable mouth, right? It's a sizable mouth, but take a frickin' the mouth of a 40 and put a 22-inch sucker in there. You ain't catching 40s. 45 is a nice fish, right? It's a nice fish, and I'm not diminishing it. Hey, it is all about experience, and do not judge me on this. A 45 is a really nice fish. In my book, it ain't a big fish, right? If I know a body of water I'm fishing, like 45 is, and again, it's all, there is also a modicum of where are you fishing, right? So if we're on Wildcat, right, in Boulder Junction.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
If we're fishing Wildcat in Boulder Junction, I think Smitty said they got a 4-footer out of there one time, which is like huge for that lake.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want a 22-inch sucker on freaking Wildcat, right? Because if you look at what that fish is willing to hit versus, you know, on any given day, are we going out and like in inland Wisconsin waters throwing 2-pounders? You can get a follow. Do it proportionally. I mean, a 45 is a great fish. It's a heck of a fish. A lot of people would just kill their grandma to catch one, and I get it. You don't need a sucker bigger than 12 inches for fish of that caliber. And I think I've caught plenty of upper 40s, low 50-inch muskies on 10 to 12-inch suckers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have had grabs. I actually had a sucker, Jay, years back. This thing lasted 3 days, and it had been hit twice. It was huge. It was the last one I had. It was like we nicknamed him in the tank because, like, well, I'm saving him for the bitter end because I don't feel confident in him. That thing was just like a bulldozer.
Bernie?
We called him Tennessee Jim, but nonetheless.
Oh, okay.
But he was a big son of a bitch. I actually turned him right back from where I got him. I was like, you have done your job. You will probably die. You couldn't set the hook on the fish. And I'm assuming it wasn't that big a fish. So a little bit of my thought is, yes, a big, big, big sucker will attract a big, big, big muskie where you're running into the dynamic of, am I going to get hook penetration, where I personally believe a 50 to 55-inch muskie is definitely happy to eat a 12-incher, right? And if you look at the size of their mouth, you know, the old thing of, he came up and his mouth was like a 5-gallon bucket, right? I've heard that bullshit before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not. It was not the size of a 5-gallon bucket, I promise you, right? His mouth was, you know, the biggest of the big. You open their mouth, it is not 22-inch. If you can slide a 22-inch sucker down their throat, right, it is no longer a muskie, it is a dinosaur, right?
Could be.
I'm saying sideways. They don't have 20. So I err on the side of conservatism. Again, I'm not trying to say a 45 is not a big fish. It's a hell of a fish anywhere you go. But proportionately, I think you're doing yourself a disservice because you really have to consider how many fish you're eliminating due to the size of your presentations, right? It's like in the Northwoods, Wisconsin. How many people do you know that throw double tens all the time? Not a lot.
Six. Not as common as in other areas, for sure.
Right. And it's commensurate to size. So, I am a mess today. I apologize, guys. I'm sneezing, I'm wheezing, freaking whatever. But, you know, you've got your cult of single sevens, which is great. You got plenty of double eights, double nines, but we get bigger, 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 blah, blah, blah. You see what I'm saying? That makes sense there. Anyway, moving on. Frankie, love the podcast. Meow.
Meow.
Frankie says, relax, Jay. He's looking for advice on trolling baits. He says, the lake I fish doesn't have huge bait. So I'm looking for downsized trolling options. You know, I have a couple headlocks, couple matlocks. I feel that downsized baits are my best advantage for musky trolling. Downsized trolling. Well, heck.
Easy.
Well timed. The Boss Shad. It's available.
Yeah. Now,
those showed up. Like I said, there's a 7. I'm pulling it back up. So 7-incher there.
His 4.5 is very popular. Popular little trolling model. There's a jointed model of it, too.
You got that. You got.
You know, another good one would be a deep 6-inch slammer if you want to get down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, beyond 10 feet trolling. That
who doesn't?
A good, noisy little.
Everybody wants to get down.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you got that. Downsized profiles. We mentioned earlier Tough Shad, great trolling bait. The slam, like you said, the slammer deep, those are killer. Little Ernie's, rarely talked about, still a killer.
Yep.
Very inexpensive. $15.99. Caught a billion muskies on Little Ernie's over the years.
Yeah, a friend that loves that bait. It's a big guide. It's a big guide platform presentation for him too. Yeah, he loves it.
Freaking Frosty.
You bet.
Now that he's a freaking he's a Little Ernie-er. Obviously, you got your lunging stuff, 22 short. You know, their stuff kind of falls under those parameters. Heck, I'm looking here, and this was trying to find. Because Spanky's been doing some of this stuff, right, with the grandma, the M9, and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have down to a 4.5 grandma.
Yeah, it's really downsizing. Yeah, it's a little minnow bait. It's real a shallow, minnow bait,
but cool stuff. And then the other thing I was going to point out is this. Killer, if you want wander and you want that big waka-waka-waka action, freaking swim with 6-inch.
Two depth settings.
Yep.
Versatile.
That was the trolling bait forever, right? Still has a place. Muskies don't know the difference. Muskies don't follow trends. But the 6-inch swim with is going to be something I would think about. What else? I'm looking here, digging in the dirt. Obviously your depth raiders, all that stuff would be good, but you know, if you're downsizing, like I said, swim whiz it up, man. That would be probably my one swim whiz. That would probably be the first one I would grab, right? Because it's such, man, it's just a trolling machine, right? But you got so much. I mean, heck, I'm looking here, what, even at Adams Customs, you've done that, the Havocs. There's so many downsized cranks. Go with, you know, check out the Boss Shed stuff. Yep. If you want just like, I know it would work anywhere, swim with.
Anywhere. Another weird option, too, would be swim baits if you want to go real shallow, like the Vipers, by Livingston, like the Fish Lab stuff.
Oh, yeah, well.
Real erratic side kicking out of thing, you know, real shallow, high in water column.
Well, that's the thing is I've had really good luck trolling the Vipers. You got that Shine Glide from Savage that I talked about the other day, which is great. Yeah, any of that stuff. But, you know, as far as a good proper trolling, grab you a swim. And I'll say this. If you're a troller and you've not trolled swim whizzes, do it. Like, you got to have that under your belt. You gotta grease one on a swim whiz at some point in your musky fishing career to go, I've done it. Ben, each fall, my family and I go north to fish to Minnesota, trying to get my wife on her first muskie. What should I do and what should I not do so we don't end up in a big fight and she falls in love with muskie fishing? I've had that fight in the boat, Jay. Can we fish for something else? No! Absolutely not. I'll drop you off of that son of a bitch that's bitching about $5 worms. So
Charlie's Worm Shack, Bemidji.
Bemidji. Check it out, Charlie's Worm Shack.
We got worms.
And they squirm. Tuesdays, 50% off flats. We just don't sell them. We breed them. Anyway, sorry, guys. We're mentally.
Well, they're overstocked on Frable worm bedding. You know, you got to put to use somehow.
Guy lives in a pile of it. We're idiots. So, musky fishing can suck, and it is a grind house. Right? We all know that. The first time you take someone that has never musky fished, they're going to be excited. This is like guide stuff, right? Everybody shows up with vacation energy, as I call it, right? They're like, we're going to kill them. No, dude, it's high, bright sun, dead flat, calm. It hasn't blown. It, you know, they don't get that. Do not take people on grindy fishing experiences out of the gate if you can avoid it. So what I've always recommended, if you're going to break somebody in, especially a female angler, and I don't mean female angler, it's the wife and he's making it out, whatever, right? I've got some badass female clients. There's some amazing female muskie anglers. So it's not male female. It's like new to it, whatever. Don't freaking do a sun up to sundown freaking hell ride.
Right, right.
Focus on the best times of day. You know, maybe you do sunrise, maybe you don't. You definitely do sunset and keep it easy, right? Don't be like, babe, they're on freaking 12-inch Livingston Lures headhunters jerked left to right and pounders, right? My number one guide bait is the Steve's Meat Grinder. A small monkey could catch a muskie with that bait, right? Throw it out, turn the handle, fish on it. Keep it simple. As easy as a bucktail might seem to you. To a new angler, a double-bladed bucktail, and I'm a guide, I deal with it all the time. You might go, there's no way. Yes, there's a way that people can't get them to go or they have problems with them. When you start musky fishing, the first bait is a spinner bait and a topwater. Throw it out, turn the handle, fish on it. That's it, right? That's where I would start.
Yeah, get them out there on peak times, like you said.
Yeah,
you
know? don't freaking
majors and minors. Yeah, if a couple hours before dark, you got a moon period. It's like, right. Okay, plan on that.
Right, right. Be strategic and have fun the rest of the day.
Yeah,
again, this is coming from a place of experience where I've taken my spouse and beat her into the ground for 12 hours in Canada. Right, the timing of when we met, Jay. Not you and I, but my wife and I. Correlated Jody to Michael. Canada, right? Oh, let's go do this. Oh, you like perch, crappie, and bass. You'll love it.
Right? And you put her through musky hell torture all day.
Right, right. You'll have
that's my boy.
Freaking figure eight, you stupid. Right. You know.
Keep casting, Jody.
Yeah. I said twitch.
Keep that bait moving.
I said twitch, not rip. You're telling me. keep it simple and keep it fun. And you know what? That is transcendent. That is freaking transcendent, whether it be your wife, whether it be your dumb cousin Eddie or your boss or your wife's boyfriend, whoever you're taking. Just make sure. Make sure that you keep it light and fun. You know, if they fall in love with it, they fall in love with it. And then you can start grinding. The quickest way to ruin it for somebody is to take them on that hell ride and just beat them into the ground. DF, I love the show. It helps me pass the time before my trips to North America. I fish in Canada for muskies when I get the opportunity. I live here. Oh shit. I live here in South Africa. Obviously there's no muskies. Keep up the great work, lads. Love, DF. Woo. Okay. Awesome. No question. That's cool. Didn't expect that one. I'll take it though. Jay is available to go to South Africa at any moment. You would have fun with that. Jason. What are your favorite musky glide baits for fall? Jay?
Musky glide baits for fall. A little bit bigger than the small 6-inch stuff. Go with a regular Hellhound. Can't beat that. If you baits, if we're talking fall, any easier than that. Yeah.
Right.
Don't
come out with your 6-inch, they'll work, but 6-inch Phantom, 6-inch Hell, go with the 8-er.
Bigger profile.
Yeah, it's fall.
Go with that 7.5 Phantom. That's a soft tail. That's got a same type glide kick to kick. Oh, geez.
For me, it's going to be the hot tails.
Hot tails, big Smutleys. Those are really good. They're just 7 or an 8-inch model. Go with those. Got a nice little wiggle and twitch the side kind of action.
The answer becomes this. The choice of glide baits is going to be based on conditions, right? So a Smutley runs shallow, but if it's fall, we're on bigger profile baits in the muskie or shallow, a Smutley would be perfect, whereas they're holding deeper on a break or deeper on a structural cover thing, whatever it is. You know, a heavier glider like the Hot Tails might be more applicable. So it's not a one-size-fits-all scenario, right? Because it's a matter of buoyancy, rate of fall, more so than just about anything else, right? We don't want to run one of the shallowest glide baits I'm aware of is, and I'm not knocking, I catch tons of fish on, River Run Manta SS, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is the super shallow. You do not want to do that when muskies are staged in a cold front in the fall on 10, 15 foot breaks. That makes no sense, right?
It does, because you're going to be, you know, too far.
However,
yeah, that if, up in the weeds.
Like I was about to say, dude that was said, I'm moving them up in the reeds in Minnesota, which is inches. That dog will hunt, son, right?
So
that is an applicable glide bait for fall under that circumstance. Right? Which is, you can tell I've been writing the next book at this point, Jay. I'm preaching. Guys, it's coming. Anyway, but it's the application, right? The bait's application or its value to you is dictated by properly using it when conditions are appropriate. All right? They're it's as simple as that. So a Manta super shallow glide bait could be the best fall glide bait for 4 days of your season, followed by the heavier action of like a hot tails fishtail could follow that up if climactic conditions point you in that direction.
It's true. Yeah.
And I've been thinking about this as much. I've just been up my own freaking just overanalyzing everything. I was on the phone with Dr. Bob. Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy town is where I'm at. And I get asked all the time by folks on the boat, and I'm going to this hungry thing. And like, you know, with the weights, what's up with the weight system? Everything with the weights, the crack in the time. Because I don't want to freaking have to think about it. If they're on 8-inch Titans, I just want to turn around tomorrow and go, they've been hitting this profile and this action. I want to get it exactly where I want to get it where it needs to be. Right. And that's my problem with, like, we talk certain bait classes, right? Where that SS Manta is only valuable to me as an angler in very narrow bandwidth. Right. It's a very narrow band that bait's value to me. Whereas I have some custom-made gliders that are heavier than frickin', it's like throwing a bowling ball, and they're only valuable to me on that flip side of that coin, if you will. So for me, it's about having baits that have as much traction, as much value through all conditions, because I'm telling you right now, on the best of days, muskies go shallow in the fall. And the best of days in the summer, muskies go shallow. And the worst, they go deep. It's nothing. 20 feet is nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing to a fish. That's one of the hardest things, I think, for people to get through their head. It's like, okay, my boat is 21 feet, Jay, right? You're freaking, you look across your house, or you look across the room or whatever, or the car you're sleeping in. Is it 20 feet? So, you know, that's not a huge move for a fish. However, it is a huge amount of water that we have to cover when we have such a narrow vibrational profile and visual range. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
20 feet away, whatever. We'll get there, but, you know, whatever. You see what I'm saying? Mandy, female muskie angler here. Thanks for all the tips. Wonder if this is the guy's wife? And she's like, I hate my husband. I'm teasing. I don't want to go fishing with him. I'm teasing. Mandy, female muskie angler here. Thanks for all the tips. I'm looking for a new reel, as the one I have seems too big for me and it's hurting my wrist. I have a St. Croix Legend Tournament Elite, but I'm using a Revo Beast. Love Steve's book. Love all the great songs. You guys make me giggle. Jay, you make somebody giggle.
No.
Legend Tournament Elite, that's a super light rod, great rod.
Mm-hmm.
And the Revo Toro Beast, that's what, 400 size?
Yeah.
Well, we go down from there. 60, I tell you right now off the top of my head. Freaking
Tranks 300.
Tranks 300.
Yeah. It'll feel a lot smaller.
But it's still big.
Those beasts, they sit kind of high. I'm not knocking them.
No.
But they have a higher feeling
frame
than even a Tranks 400.
Yep.
Even most of the, I've got some fantastic Daiwas I like as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those TWs.
They're great.
It's a smaller, lighter feeling platform. I could be happy with either one of those.
It's funny because Daiwa has been so kind to help out with reels last couple years. And so all my client reels and all my guide reels right now are TWs and Pro Rexes, right? With the T wing bar and all that. It's wonderful. I picked up, and I love the reel. Don't get me wrong. The old white Abus. Right? Revo. Was it Revo
S's?
Toro? Yeah, or Revo S. That was
so.
My reel forever. You couldn't pry that out of my freaking hands.
Mm-hmm.
I picked one up the other day, and physically in my hand, I went, holy crap, it felt heavy versus how much weight reductions happened between that and the Pro Rex.
Sure, sure.
And I'm not big on like, oh, the reel weight. But I get it if you're, you know, everybody's physicality is different, right? So there's no, like, one answer. I mean, if you're 6'15", you know, it's like Tim, my buddy from the Netherlands. He could palm a freaking Tranks 500 if he wanted to. He's a giant.
Mm-hmm.
But he fishes a 400, and it's probably, I mean, it's not a big reel for him. But the one thing, and we always say this all the time, I don't believe, personally, and I'm not talking like Chinese Yim and stuff like that that's on the market. I'm talking like Daiwa, Shimano, Abu Garcia, Akuma, all the different brands right now. I think they all make really good reels. So it's hard for me at a lot of junctures where, you know, a couple years back on the podcast, I'd say, do this, do that, do that. I feel like all the reels are pretty dang good right now.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I look at the last four reels that I've bought.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm slowly progressing into, you know, the 2020s here, Steve, you know, inch by inch. It's just like, you know, in the last 5 years, the amount of quality type changes that have occurred and gone into the engineering of all these reels.
Right.
Like, everything you mentioned, they're fantastic.
Right. Whether it be weight reduction, whether it be balance mm-hmm. on the rod, blah, 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 blah. It's great.
Yeah, overall size,
Look at, okay, we'll get to your question, Manny, I swear, but we always rabbit hole here. Remember the first Daiwa Lexus, the blue ones, versus what we have now. Way different. You know what I'm saying? It was a far larger reel.
Yeah.
So they're getting smaller, they're getting lighter, and they're as strong, if not stronger, blah, 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 blah. So we always say it, and I always kind of lean towards it's about the comfort level for you. I would say flat out, probably for most people, the most comfortable reel is the 400 Tranks. Like, it kind of transcends. I'd say the Pro Rex frame is slightly larger than the 400. I mean, talking ever so slightly, right? Whereas, like, the current model, which I'll tell you what, it's interesting. I'll see if in Budapest if they've got because Abu's got new stuff coming out. So I want to see what they're doing, right? Hopefully they're there. But if I have these in the boat for female anglers, my wife has one, the Tranks 300.
That's what Jody uses primarily for when she muskie fishes?
For muskie, and then she's got a freaking 150, which is just like, it's awesome. It's like a DX 150 from Shimano. It's kind of it's like a hyped up bass reel from hell, but for muskie, she's doing the 300. And I have 300 for female clients, children, things of that nature, or people just smaller people, whatever. It doesn't matter. We all come mm-hmm. in different shapes and sizes, Jay. If you if you hang out the truck stop long enough, you'll realize that we're all different, but we're all beautiful. But that would be my go-to for a female angler. The same thing, however, I would say, it's the Kuma. No, it's the Pin. Pin had the
Fathoms and
no, the other ones, the smaller ones. I can't remember the name. I don't even know if they make them anymore. Doesn't matter. That would be my thing. Is that's going to be the go-to. Go with the, forget about it. Go with the Shimano 300. It's bulletproof. It's perfect. You know, that's where I'm at. Personally, I can say this, Jay. It's like I have the Daiwa 500. I can't remember if it's a TW.
No, it's whatever. Like a Lexa 500. Yeah.
Huge. It's a great reel. It's huge.
Yeah, it's a big platform reel.
Big platform. So, you know, it's applicable when it's applicable. However, Shimano Tranx 300, that'll get you done. Whatever. Vince, I'm a Creaker from West Virginia. Creaker. Wanted to know, when you guys think the best time to check out Wisconsin, mainly central Wisconsin, would be. Looking to plan a trip next year. Thanks in advance. Jay, take it away. When's the best time for central
Wisconsin? I wonder where he's fishing. Plover. Stuff like that. Probably the river system.
I don't know.
There's not a lot of lake varieties in there. I mean, there are some, but best time. depends.
He's talking for next year. He's talking for next year.
Early season, depending on how the weather situates, you know, the first couple, everything's a little bit ahead of northern Wisconsin in central Wisconsin. There is a noticeable difference. I mean, it's closer to the southern Wisconsin range, which really kicks in a good 2 weeks before us, if not 3 weeks, judging strictly from ice out and, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 degrees warmer every day. It makes a big difference in May. So the first week of June could be excellent, especially if you're fishing river systems. You get in that quickly warming water.
Creaker, he could do that, baby.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of opportunity there. A lot of river stretches that contain big fish too. So that's a great time of the year. I'd say right between Memorial Day and say the second week of June, do an early season trip, and probably right about now, say mid September. And that would be another good option for a good action trip. So
earlier or late, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets really hot, you know, and if especially if you're fishing river systems, you know, if it's a hot summer, you could run into some slow periods in the middle of summer.
Yeah. Well, that's anything for sure. Yeah. But now that'd be cool. I mean, you just don't hear a tremendous saying it out loud. You hear about, you know, Madison Chain, all the stuff in the south. And then you hear anything, you know, freaking Hazelhurst, Minocqua, Eagle River, all that stuff north. Central West. Maybe he's got family there, Jay.
Maybe. Well, you know, maybe. Yeah, I mean, hey, experience plover, baby. I mean, look for the famous water well.
What, you could go see the Tommy Bartlett Magic Show.
Yep. Yep. The Dells is not far away.
I see signs for that every time I'm driving up. So
cool.
That's cool. So go early, go late. Here comes Kenneth. I know this might be dumb, but can you explain what tannic water is? I live in an area where all of our waterways are very clear, and I've never heard the term used outside of the podcast and some musky videos. I know I'm an idiot. Don't make fun of me. We would never.
Nope.
Kenneth doesn't know what tannic water is. Now, I don't deal with much tannic water myself until I'm up in the north. Tannic water is water that is stained by the tannic acid of pine trees. That's it. And it creates this kind of brown look, Jay. Why don't you, Mr. Northwoods, explain?
common in flowages. There are some lakes that have bizarre tannic water. That one we fished two years ago, we went out there several times. Mm-hmm. That one that's very shallow and very dark, almost a blackish water with really low visibility. I'm talking like under a foot. Mm-hmm. That's kind of uncommon. I mean, generally tannic water around here, you've got 3-4 feet visibility, which is, I don't know, I'd consider that moderate visibility. I like that personally. You know, gin clear water can be tougher to fish. You know, fish are spookier and they generally, you know, inhabit deeper zones and they're harder to target. So when fish are active, tannic water can be the trick too. I mean, and then if it's spring, it warms up faster, you know, absorbs sunlight mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, superheats it quicker. And yeah. There's a lot of options around here that have tannic water. It's not all gin clear water, although we have that too. We have deep clear lakes that are, you know, Canadian like, you know, with rock and the whole deal and limited vegetation. But tannic water usually has, you know, they are generally good weed lakes too, where the weeds will grow to 10 feet plus, 12 feet. Mm-hmm. Unlike some of the deep clear lakes around here, they're more, I consider more infertile in that weeds don't grow in abundance. And, you know, you don't have that thick, dense weed growth with the exception of a few that have milfoil. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that on a few lakes like that one we fished out by Eagle River, which got inhabited by milfoil. It's mm-hmm. kind of rare around here, but it's starting to happen here on a few lakes. And that stuff is incredible when you see that in clear water and you have these mats of vegetation, literally, that grow from the top to the bottom mm-hmm. of the lake, 10 feet, 12 feet down.
Right.
So there's literally vertical walls of vegetation, which is not something that lake normally is going to, has ever had historically. So I imagine it's incorporating some huge changes to the fishery.
Exactly. So I just looked here just to double check. The Google says you will have tannic water in the south too because of cypress trees, Jay. So it's a vegetation thing, tannins.
Okay.
So a little bit of that marshy, swampy kind of thing. Yeah, it's just a coloration. You know, it just changes things, I think, in some capacity where, you know, yeah, I'm not changing my tactics entirely, but light penetration is different. Things change up quite a bit, Greg. Excuse me. I am dying here, Jay. Ugh. That's the last time I eat a French dip before the podcast. Greg, okay. Jig rippers or the new St. Croix rod for jigging? Thoughts? Thanks.
So, okay. Well, they're both going to be removable now.
Neither.
So that's a plus. But
anyway, mm-hmm. I am of the school of neither. Just tell me. Okay. I've said it before. Rotate your radius in your ulna, right? And set the hook. Because, Jay, make a hand, right? Like you're holding a jig ripper. Move it up and down.
Okay.
What does that look like?
Awkward?
Awkward. Anyway, I prefer to hold the foregrip, right? So I can really lean into the bicep on the hook set and set across the body while jigging.
Yeah.
That's me. I don't know. Big companies are taking the leap, Jay. You said St. Croix coming out. They got jig ripper things, all that stuff.
Yeah, St. Croix making the move on. Well, they discontinued their Musky Mojo and they discontinued the tournament series.
Mm-hmm. Good move.
Those are done, and there's not many left at the shop. So
get them.
Okay. They're both going to come out with a grasp. They call it a grasp handle system, and that's on the way. It's supposed to be this year.
Right.
We don't know when. So that's a removable handle, two sizes. Little tiny one and about the original size that the tournaments had this last year,
which
that were fixed,
too small.
You know, decent sized handle.
No,
still not large, still a little bit smaller than the jig ripper.
Here's my thing.
Yeah.
St. Croix. I've had that size handle in the palm of my hand in the store. It literally, Jay, if I grab that like a jig ripper or pistol grip, it comes to the center of my palm. That's it.
Not enough meat there.
Not enough meat.
Is what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Once again, Jay, take your hand. Pretend you're holding a jig ripper, right? And then thrust it at your face. See how you can set the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, I don't feel that that is a substantial enough handle. That's my opinion. Sorry. It is what it is. Flat out. You know, I'm holding, I've held those in my hands and gone, okay, is that enough for me to transfer power across the board, changing my physicality, changing the dynamic of my hook set?
Because what I'm envisioning with this being kind of a smaller handle, like you're describing here, is that half the power is directed to the handle and the other half is directed to the two fingers that are still on the foregrip.
Well, for me, it's
why,
like I said, rotate your hand, right? So your radius and you're on a turn in your arm, and you focus on a different motion, right? So with the jig ripper style things, right? If you think of setting that up, it's less natural to me to go across my chest than when I'm holding the foregrip of a rod. It's a much more bicep movement to me. At least, you know, I'm not freaking That's where I'm at. Moving on. Yeah. Dave. Steve, love the Kraken. Any plans for a 7-inch model? Yes. Take the scissors and cut 3 inches off. That's what I do. That's a little ninja trick, Jay.
That's a big trick.
Yeah. So when if you look the way this bait was made, the crack, and so the way the wire, it protrudes out of the back, and the way it sits in the skirt, you can cut 3 inches off the skirt and have a hook set flush right there. I think I said it before, but you can do that super easy because you have the same diameter on a 7-inch model. Trim it back, take the split ring off, shorten the shank on your hook, and you're in the game. Robert, I keep getting leaky crankbaits. Any tips for fixing them? No matter how many of a certain brand, I'll pass on that. I buy, they all seem to leak. I'd buy them from different stores, not just the Muskie shop. I'm not upset, just don't know how to fix them. How do we fix a leaky crankbait, Jay?
That can be difficult. You got to assess where the leak is. You got to get all the moisture out of there. Two-tone epoxy over the crack or the seam.
Well, it's one way to do it. Hook hangers.
Typically, the
model he's talking about, right?
Okay.
Yeah. What I do with any like plastic crankbait that is joined together, they're hypersonically sealed. It's not a bad practice to drop a little super glue under the hook hanger. That's where the water's getting in. Get all the water out by shaking it like a fool. Take the hooks off. Shake it like a fool and get the water out. Let it dry for a couple days. And put some super glue in there. It is not one of my baits. Ryan. I love shallow invaders, but my hooks keep getting caught on each other. Should I do the mod where I see people adding a bar that I've seen in videos? It seems like it adds weight to the bait and is a little complicated. What's your best idea to stop the hooks from tangling? Flat out. Love shallow invaders. Great bait.
Mm-hmm.
Take the rear hook and jam it in the tail. Right?
But easiest way to fix it. Yeah.
But do it in a manner that you got a little play in the split ring and you don't want it to be real tight.
Yes.
Right? shove it in the meat of the tail, but the split ring has a smidge of play, so it won't impede the action. You will not hook foul again. You don't need to mod the bait. You don't need to do all this weird stuff. Stick the rear hook in the tail. You're done. The other thing, talking about bait, what I like to do on shallow invaders, because I've shallow invaders hold up very well. I will just take super glue and pull the tail back just a smidge and drop some super glue in there just to really secure that guy up too. So I'm not worried about like the tails pulling out or anything of that nature. 99% they headhunt that bait. Right? So just jam the freaking hook in the back of the tail and be done with it.
Yeah, I'd recommend a drop of super glue on that because it'll work its way out after a while. So, yep, that's all you need to do.
It is what it is. Mr. Nelson. Ooh, we got a mister on the show, Jay.
Hello.
I enjoy listening to your show as I'm a lifelong muskie angler. I'm about to turn 70 and still like hearing all your zany stories and all the new tactics and baits. Oh, that's cool. I know he's not the oldest listener though, Jay. Your dad beats him. He's only this guy's only turning 70. He's rookie rookie numbers, they say.
Rookie numbers, yeah, right.
He said, "I know there are so many new baits. So I wanted to ask you two fellows, what old baits do you still use? I hope my tackle box is not just a collection of antiques that my children will have to throw out." What a cool question, Mr. Nelson. Thank you for listening. Appreciate that. Very cool. Old baits that are still gold, Jay.
Suic.
Suic? Absolutely. Cisco Kids.
Yep.
The Booker stuff, obviously.
But, yep. I've got some Depth Raiders when they came out and probably, when did they come out? 92 or something like that?
Maybe even.
I remember.
Let's go older than that, though.
That I still use. Giant Jackpots.
Pose Giant Jackpot, baby.
Yep. Got some super old ones.
Tom loves Burmix.
Hold on. I'm breaking open the...
Oh, the Lakewood of Doom there.
The Lakewood of Doom. Oh, baby. Nope. Not going to talk about that one. I think there's some crazy stuff in here, Steve.
The guy's been dead since 74.
Crazy old refogs.
Refogs? We talk about that?
Yep. Yep. Stuff you can't find anymore. Crazy old grandmas. Oof.
That's your favorite crazy old grandmas, isn't it?
Handmade stuff.
Well, I got a. What's something you still use? He doesn't want to know what you collected. Something that is old school as heck that I still use that has served me well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has always been the freaking, and he just passed. What's the Gooch's freaking tallywhacker, baby?
Mm-hmm.
Gooch's tallywhacker. It is a tail prop bait. It sounds different from all the rest. That works. The Pose Giant Jackpot, that plays in my game. We've talked about Reef Hog. That's a different experience, right? There's nothing wrong with it, but you're like, don't expect left to right. Obviously, Suics have been around since the dawn of time. They were invented before muskies were invented. What else, Jay? What's something that's like kind of 70s? This guy's turning 70.
My gosh.
He's musky fishing in the back of that day.
Oh, 70s would be probably Swim Whizzes.
There you go. We talked about it earlier. That's we my did. Call.
Yeah.
Swim Whiz. Still got him in the boat.
I'm going 9-inch Suic, like I said, so that's mine, but that would be that I still use. Yeah.
Hey, can't go wrong there. Your tackle box is not all antiques. They still play. Thank you for listening, Mr. Nelson. Much appreciated. Sean, looking to upgrade all of my trolling reels. I troll 4 in total. What is the best option that you feel is better than the Kuma Convectors that I currently have? What do you think, Jay? Akuma Convectors, a fine trolling reel. They're just big.
Yeah, good basic reel. There are some good Daiwas. I'm trying to think of what the model is on those. And the cool thing about trolling reels is that you don't even have to spend half the price on a good casting reel. You know?
No.
That's what's awesome about it.
I'm looking at what
you can get set up for, you know, a fraction of the cost of a brand new trace or something.
And
you know?
I get it. It's like with the convectors. I ran them forever with being a lefty, right? But being a left-handed angler, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That was the only option I had for a long time. And then I am with Daiwa, so I'm running the Daiwa line counters, and they're great. But I'll say this. The jump from the convector to the cold water is a big jump in, as far as quality and downsizing the entire profile. The Akuma cold water?
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, the convectors are $109. The cold water is $139.99. The pin rival line counter is about the same size. Slightly smaller, but not like kind of a downsize from the convector. But then Akuma has the convector low profiles, right? So if you like the Akumas have served you well, they make the low profile convectors, which is a smaller platform. So Akuma's kind of got the cat by the proverbial tail right now. Because the next step up from that is you get into like the Shimano Takoda or the Daiwa Alexa. Right? So for musky grade trolling reels, there's not a ton of options because it just is what it is. What do you think, Jay? Like I get it. Convectors are big. You feel like you should be fishing on wicked tuna with that reel. It's a huge reel.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he's done with them. I'm assuming
he said he wants to upgrade. The one thing I'll say, they're slow. They're like 4.1 or something, right? So they're I ran them for years. I got my own qualms. They're bigger than hell. They're hard to store. They hold 7 billion miles of line, and reeling in a Jake with 100 feet out takes. I mean, literally, you could have a birthday before you get back to the boat, right?
So, yeah, that's been my takeaway on those darn line counters is the one thing is most of them are offered in really low gear ratio. It's like, come on, guys. Right. 4.2-1, really? Right. You're cranking your brains out trying to, you know, pick up line when you got a, you know, when you got a fish on. It's like, come on.
If those are the two negatives of what we'd say that size, there's nothing wrong with them. I've caught more. The majority of my trolling fish have all come on a Akuma convector, the big ones, right? Just because I've been with the Daiwas last. However, they served me well, but it's a slow reel. Okay, so we're looking at 4.2-1 on the cold water, Akuma. Right? But it's a smaller profile. The Pro-Rex line counter. That's a 6.1-1 reel. And it's a far smaller profile. So the upgrade you can make from the convector would be a smaller profile with a higher line pickup, right? So the cold water, like I said, is about where you're at as far as reel speed to the convectors you already have. Whereas, let me check this one here.
Well, there is a convector, a high-speed convector that we have out now, too. So that's got real high-speed pickup.
5.4, yeah. So you could go with a low profile convector, the Pro-Rex, or the Takoda. And the Takoda is $10 cheaper than the Daiwa. The Takoda is kind of like the Cadillac of trolling reels, really, in my opinion. It's kind of a ridiculously nice trolling reel. I think that's what the Tube Screamer runs.
I think he does.
I mean, you know. That's what I would run if I owned the Muskie Shop. You know, it's a hell of a reel. It's really not that bad. I'm just picking. But so if you're going for the convector, let's downsize our profile and let's speed up our line pickup. So really, that's going to be your options there. You've got the Daiwa Saltus. What's this? I've not had one of those in my hands, the Saltus. What's the size of that, Jay, kind of in your hand?
Saltus is a high sitting reel.
Is it? Okay. So
yeah, Yeah, that Schmutt on Takota would be probably, if you want to upgrade, you're talking smaller, lighter, great quality, and the thing's got a high speed retrieve. So I think problem solved with that one right there.
Which is what?
That Shimano Takota.
Yeah. Can't go wrong. I mean, it's a wicked. I mean, that's as good as they get. Mm-hmm. That is as good as they get. Jay, we have rambled on. Ramble on.
Oh, really?
Endlessly.
Oh, well put.
However, we appreciate all the questions. I'm sure you guys will have a ton more.
We do. Had some guys in the shop Friday. One guy from Finland and his wife. I didn't even tell you about that. Yeah, neat couple. Yeah. What? He fishes up where you guys went, up by Tim. He
Is
fishes
he
the same area.
A podcaster or something?
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
What do yeah.
you think? I'm going to try. I got to email the guy. There's a guy in London. It was crazy because, like, in the Netherlands, there was a guy that came over and we hooked up and had a drink. I was in Amsterdam. That's a podcast guy, and we're just bullshitting about stuff. And then, like, there's a guy in London I'm going to try to meet up with because I have, like, the world's craziest layover. So, yeah, it blows my mind, like, the email from South Africa earlier. Like, are you kidding me? So I appreciate all the support. Jay doesn't, which is something we'll talk about. Jay's kind of mean. But anyway, Jay.
Yes, Steve.
Next week, hopefully we can recap the comings and the goings of the biggest fishing show on the entire continent of Europe.
Okay.
See what's happening there. Maybe I'll just have some Pepsis and jump in the fish tank. What do you think?
Okay. Well, be safe, man. It's a long trip. Can't wait to hear about it.
Nothing scares me, baby. Say goodnight, Jaybird.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Later. Night.
I can't guess this way much longer. Expecting it to survive.